Hey friends, I'm Ashley.
Hey you guys.
I'm Lainey.
And this is Haunted Real Estate.
Hello.
Oh, wow. I was like taking in my hello breath and you just interrupted it. That was so weird.
I did that on purpose.
Wow. Okay. So Lainey and I decided we needed to bring back a Victorian tradition of winter spooky stories. I don't know. I guess I thought you were going to say something. But without like making up ghost stories, like, you know, like a Charles Dickens type stories with three ghosts of Christmas past or Christmas past, present, future.
Wow. That was exactly the title of mine last year. Thanks a lot.
What? Was it?
It was Ghosts of Christmas Past. It wasn't.
No, I just meant making up story, you know, yeah. Like a fictional tale.
Yeah.
Oh my God, do we have like similar nails right now?
I can't see yours. They're up. Oh, hey.
We do.
Look at that.
We do. We have the almond-shaped nails right now.
I did mine for my Christmas party.
That's what I did it for. Nice. Except mine was last Friday, so they're just still done.
Nice.
That's funny.
Look at us. Our nails did and everything.
Uh-huh. Looking pretty for the holidays. So yeah, we didn't want to make up a story. You know, we like to tell our legends and other, I mean, you know, also true tales too. So it's kind of hard to find something that's like specifically Christmas related. So I can't say that this is specifically Christmas related. Because if like you look up, you know, like true crime stories of Christmas, you have like JonBenet Ramsey, which... That was way heavier than I wanted to do. And as you guys may have noticed, we don't do as much true crime because it's just, it's a lot.
Or more haunting.
Yeah, it's more haunting and haunted history and like creepy things that have happened at places. That's kind of what I like to do. I like to keep it light. I don't like it too heavy because I don't know. It just like affects me for days.
I would also, you know, I got emotional during one of our podcasts and I don't think that's something fun for someone to listen to Lainey get emotional.
Oh yeah, you would. You turn into a sad sack of tears.
I do. And I can't pull myself out of it. So it's just, no.
I know. We both kind of do that. I mean, I think like you get a little bit more emotional than me, but like affect me for a few days because I went into the research and all that stuff. So yeah. Not that this is, I would say, lighthearted, but I do think it's interesting history.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, like I said, this is not specifically Christmas, but it is a wintertime tale, and it is the tale of the Donner Party.
That's a fun Christmas tale.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, because there's so much like starvation in this story, I ate a lot while researching. Like every
really?
Yeah, because I was like deep into like a documentary and researching and all that stuff. And I was like, Casey, can you bring me some chips? Casey, can you make me some popcorn? Casey, I need some ramen. Because I was just like, I can't. Starvation is hard to, it's hard to read about. Like, obviously, live it, yes. But I just, that was tough. Okay, so let's first lay some of the backdrop of America during this time. So it's the 1840s.
All right.
So 100 years before World War II, America is expanding across the United States, but they're really going west. So there, because we started at the east, you know, 13 colonies, mm-hmm. that whole thing.
Is that what we did?
That's what we did.
All right.
So there were many new opportunities opening up for Americans and even immigrants who wanted to come to the U.S. I mean, there were a lot of opportunities. Transportation was beginning to improve. And although it's the 1840s, transportation really didn't get to like this next level until about 20 years later during the Civil War, because like war or not, it's always a crazy progress for technology.
Yeah.
Like when you talk about like airplanes, commercial flights, computers, like the railroads improved immensely, like all that is because of war. So war sucks, but war also is a part of I mean, it just propels things into the future.
I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah. When I used to teach about World War One and Two, we would talk about all the crazy technology that came out for the time, which, I mean, World War One and Two both had so much technology that came out. I mean, obviously, a lot of it is used for weapons, but transportation always has to improve during those times. So, yeah, it's fascinating. So this is before the Civil War. So you don't have fast travel. It's definitely on the slower side.
What do we have? Just trains is the fastest and cars?
During this time in the 1840s?
There's no cars.
Trains are still a pretty relatively new.
When did cars come out?
I think it was the late 1800s, early 1900s.
All right. Sorry, guys, if y'all think I'm dumb.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
Yeah, I believe it was 1800s, late 1800s. So it was probably at least 50 years after this that you really started seeing that, but not even on a mass scale, right? You see it like for the wealthy.
Got it.
Or like the horseless carriage, you know, like that's what that came out first. So yeah, railroads was such a vital part. But the thing is that railroads were still mostly in the north, and this is going out west, and this is new territory. And a lot of this was even Mexican territory. So you definitely don't have available transportation here, but so many economic opportunities. So commodities such as gold and silver were being discovered in the Rockies. So people were moving out to California. Like if you remember the 49ers, this is the 1840s, but we're not quite at the 49ers. But the 49ers was the peak of the gold rush. So like this is a little bit early.
But I know you just talked about the gold rush, but yeah. Every time you say 49ers, I think of sports.
Yes. Like, well, it's still named after the gold miners.
I know.
So the U.S. is beginning to encourage Americans to move out west for farmland or, you know, just for whatever economic opportunities. But it's not until the 1860s that the Homestead Act passed, which basically allowed Americans to acquire land for very cheap. So this is still before that. So people were brave to go out west because, one, you don't have all the incentives that are going to be offered within the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the technology that can get you there very quickly, and you know this is going to be a incredibly dangerous journey.
Absolutely.
So, in addition, like some of the land was kind of terrible for farming when you get into what you got from the Homestead Act. A lot of it was infertile land, but this still predates the Homestead Act. So many other countries outside the U.S. were experiencing famine, political unrest that had more and more people migrating to the United States. Plus, with the United States having religious freedom, this was a big selling point to bring in more folks into the United States that were facing many hardships in their motherlands. So the United States was reshaping its demographic and cultural landscape, definitely. So it's the shortened version. That's kind of what's going on here in the background. Now let's get into, we're about to get into the Donner Party. So most people traveled in wagon trains, which usually started in Missouri. And this is where really the Oregon Trail started, was in Missouri, and then would go over into California and Missouri, in Oregon. So wagon trains were large groups coming together to travel to the west. And depending on the weather and where you started, this grueling journey took 4 to 6 months, traveling about 15 miles per day.
Oh, per day. That sucks.
Like driving 15 miles per hour would be the slowest trip. So yeah, 4 to 6 months, about 15 miles per day. So when we complain of a 4 to 6 hour plane ride, just think about your great, 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 great ancestors who had to endure a rocky ride for 4 to 6 months, going only 15 miles per day. And like that might even be on a good day. Depending on the terrain, you might be going like 1 mile a day. Again, that's rough terrain if you're only going a mile a day, but like 15 miles a day is still, that's tough.
Just going in slow motion.
Slow motion, exactly. One of the more common trails the settlers used was the South Pass. So after going through this pass, many split off into different sort of ways, all thinking that they had a shortcut or the safest route. Usually the shortcut was the most enticing thing because even in the 1840s, people are like, that's a long time out of my life that I'm taking to travel to go out west. So with these shortcuts, there's usually a catch, right? Or else it would just be known as the way. It wouldn't be a shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be usually something that's more dangerous, or you're going to have to go through, you know, like the haunted woods or like these cliffs, or you're going to have to go through a desert to get there. Like the shortcut has a catch. So since many people were traveling west, there were guides that were being sold giving the best routes, quote unquote.
Yeah.
One of these fellas who made a guide, his name was Lansford Hastings. He wrote one of these guides called The Immigrant's Guide to Oregon and California. Now, this guy liked to give out routes on the best way to get out west.
Is he a liar?
He is a liar.
Okay.
And unfortunately, this tool bag also never tried it himself. I don't know exactly how he decided this was a shortcut, but I would guess he looked at a map and was like, yeah, go that way. That makes sense. But without actually going on the terrain himself and not knowing the conditions. So one of his directions for this quick route to get to California was through the Great Basin. So this shortcut, quote unquote, was known as the Hastings Cutoff, named after himself, of course. He did in 1846 end up making the journey to California, and he like adamantly convinced all these travelers to try and use his shortcut. Like, this guy wanted to be known for his shortcut.
Yeah.
Which was a long cut, by the way. It wasn't a shortcut. It was horrible.
It's a good thing to have your name.
Yeah, like, on. I don't understand why you decided you wanted to tie your name to this, but I have some theories I will discuss. So the last 100 miles of this trip was really going to be one of the hardest, and not because everyone was having the, like, are we there yet mentality, but literally the most challenging terrain to cross. You had mountain peaks that reached up to 12,000 feet high. You had several feet of snow drifts, so timing was everything. Summer brought grueling heat, and the wagons would even get stuck in the mud sometimes, and wagon wheels, like, you can't really get past that very easily. And some people just had to abandon their wagons and even abandon their cattle just and walk out of it. And then your wagons are gone. Like, you can't carry anything at that point. Yeah, exactly. And then the winter was extremely difficult. Most tried to complete this portion in the Great Basin area. They tried to complete that before winter because it was one of the hardest, harshest also areas to cross. But not every group was lucky enough to get past this in time, unfortunately. So timing out the journey is very hard because, again, you're 4 to 6 months. So when you're talking about something that's over way out west, like, okay, this is going to be, you know, 4 to 5 months into our journey. Well, think about all the things that can happen in the 4 to 5 months to get there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have storms. You have diseases which were rampant. Cholera was one of the more common diseases that spread, and cholera is spreads very rapidly, and it's usually due to poor sanitation and contaminated water.
I have a dumb question, probably. Isn't cholera, didn't babies have that?
That's colic.
Wow.
Oh, that is so good.
I am so embarrassed.
Yeah. No, the colic, like when you said, like, oh, I have a colicky baby, you know, they're usually crying a lot.
I'm aware.
That's, oh,
I'm so sorry.
That poor cholera baby. That really changes the name for me. So typhoid fever was another. Those
babies have that too.
No.
I know. I'm totally kidding.
Another baby. Hand, foot, and mouth. Yeah, that one too. That was running rampant. Yeah, so typhoid is usually from contaminated food and water, which I always think of Typhoid Mary.
Yeah, that just seems gross.
Yeah, unsanitary. Malaria, tuberculosis, dysentery, measles, scarlet fever, diphtheria, which diphtheria is a bacterial infection, the infection that mostly affects children.
Oh, and good. There's one for babies.
Yeah, there you go. It's that diphtheria. And then always a problem, influenza. So you have all these different things that you have to battle along the way. So diseases often devastated groups, holding them up for days or even weeks longer than intended. And then, like I said, floods and storms. Like, you're not just dealing with a flood or storm. Like, if you have to cross a river and it's flooded because of a storm, you have to wait. Like, I mean, like, there's just no way around it. Some areas would be impassable for days and weeks. And then the most scary is running out of food. If you didn't plan this out right, or you got delayed a certain amount of time, because food's not going to stay good forever, you do have your cattle with you, so you kind of have, like, food to go along the way. But food could run scarce. And there were Native Americans along the way that could also delay the journey. So there are so many delays that, like, you can't really keep a tight schedule. There's so many unpredictable things that can happen along the way when you're traversing the United States on wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, literally, it's life or death. Like, this is not, you know, taking a road trip with your friends. So now let's get to the Donner Party. So leader of the pack was George Donner. He was from North Dakota, and before making the journey across the West, he lived in Springfield, Illinois with his wife, Tamsin, and their 5 children.
I like the name Tamsin.
It is kind of cute. Yeah. Like, I thought it was. Yeah. Did you think that? Yeah.
Yeah.
That was weird. I don't know why I said that.
I kind of like it for a dog. Not that I think she sounds like a dog's name, but that sounds like a cute dog's name.
Yeah.
Tamsin.
Yeah. Side note, I saw a lot of pictures of these people, and it's hard to find, like, attractive people of the time.
Yeah.
And I get why, like, before anybody comes after me over it, I get why, but, you know, like, Aunt Julie showed us a picture of our family from the 1800s, and I was like, attractive bunch. God, it's like, did I get those genes? Do I look like that? But times were tough, you guys. Times were tough.
Yeah.
So George and Tamsin Donner, and they had their 5 children. He was about 60 years old, and she was 44. And I'm not going to lie. Like I said, her picture, she looked like 81. Like, you wouldn't think looked 44. Like, I'm not super far from 44. And I'm like, we're not in the same ballpark, are we here?
No.
Now, like you say, no, you've never seen her. But here, actually, I think I saved a picture of her because Tamsin is actually one of the ghosts. There's a lot here. I got all the way to the bottom and I just had one picture and it was not of Tamsin. Look her up on your phone.
All right. Tamsin Donner.
I'm not going to lie. I don't even know what I did with my phone. Oh, it's right here.
I see a photo and...
Like, does she look 44 or does she look like, you know, like she'd be your grandma?
I'd say I'll look like.
Shut just the hell up. Like, that's a rough 44.
That is a rough
44. And like, she was a little like affluent, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you had the better products. So anyway, SPF didn't really exist at the time, and times were tough. So, skincare people. So Jacob Donner, this was George Donner's brother. He also accompanied the family along with his wife and their 7 children.
Oh, the children are with them.
Oh, yeah. They're going to move.
I don't know why. I thought the Donner party was all adults, but...
Oh, no. It's mostly kids.
Oh, so sad.
So 45-year-old James Reed was a migrant from Ireland. He came to the U.S., brought his wife and their 4 children, along with his 75-year-old mother-in-law, who was unfortunately suffering from tuberculosis. So the timing of this is really rough on her.
That really sucks to travel, especially how they did back then.
Yeah.
Because you're sick.
You have to know that there is a good chance you're not going to make this journey. Like, you're talking 4 to 6 months when you're already going through like this miserable illness. So she was going to struggle. James Reed also brought some of their domestic servants. He was wealthy. He was able to afford good quality large wagons along the way and was able to hire help. And so these helpers were like, they were known as Teamsters. So these Teamsters would like help get across to the West. So James Reed wanted to find relief for his wife and his wife's mother and his wife. And one of the things you hear about with tuberculosis is that like you need sunlight, mm-hmm. fresh sunshine, warmer weather, that is really good. So James Reed thought that the weather in California would greatly benefit his family. So the Donners and the Reed family were all well known, but we don't really know like their connection to each other. Like, were they friends? Were they acquaintances? Did someone just say like, hey, I know someone who's going out west. You should connect with them. 1840s, we don't know how they know each other. So we just know they came together to travel across the U.S. and it was probably a relationship more out of convenience than anything else.
What time of year is this?
So I'm about to tell you like when it starts. So we'll get there in just a minute. So even letters written from the members of the Donner Party, and when I say the Donner Party, I'm referring to the group as a whole that's traveling together, not just the Donner family. But the letters don't really mention each other's families, so we don't really think they're friends. Not enemies either, but just because the letters that they would send back to their family, they just don't really mention each other very much. So it just seems everyone's kind of with their family in wagons, and they're just all together on the trail going the same direction, essentially.
Got it.
So it really seems like people that had the same, like they just had the same end goal in mind. So each family had about 3 covered wagons and they hired help to get to California. So the party started with 31 people and at its peak would grow to 87. So it did grow along the way, but it started at 31. There were 29 men, 15 women, and 43 children.
Damn.
So I guess it's kind of even between adults and children, but keep in mind that some of that is hired help. So they, like the hired help isn't bringing their children.
Yeah.
So they started in Independence, Missouri. And this was the start of the Oregon Trail if you're on the east side. So from there, they'd go through Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, Idaho, and then ultimately Oregon. And then if they want to go to California, they go to California, which is just south of Oregon.
Okay.
So they wanted to begin their journey after spring, after the spring rain specifically. And that was due to the fact that spring rain brings vegetation. So the grass would be plentiful. It'd be really easy to feed their cattle and other animals along the way.
That makes sense.
So it was, they were smart about it. They were being strategic. All makes sense. So they wanted to get to the Sierra Nevada mountains before the snow began to fall. So, because the snowfall obviously is going to be a big deal for multiple reasons, but it could ultimately block their way and they could get trapped. So the beginning of their trip, they actually, because remember, they started in Missouri, but they came from Springfield, Illinois. So that alone was 250 miles. And then once they got to Missouri, they spent about 2 days getting ready, getting their supplies and everything they needed for the trip. And so, like I said, this is the actual Oregon Trail. So May 12th, it's May. So after spring, it's gonna be May. They were ready to set off. So Kansas had high waters due to a storm, and that's within the first leg of their trip. So already they're hitting a delay. They got a little bit of a setback. So it was around this point that James Reed's mother-in-law succumbed to her tuberculosis and she died.
Oh,
so she,
you just have to bury her somewhere.
Made it a state. Yeah, you do. That like you can't carry that body for months and months. So yeah, you just have to bury her along the way and like
never visit her.
Like you're not going to visit her. You're not. Like you're not going to travel back there by wagon to go visit. So like, that's just it. And she was buried in Kansas. So we left May 12th. They buried her in Kansas. Now we're at May 30th. So she didn't even make it like barely 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But they had to continue after they were delayed. It was around this point that their group got to its peak size and several other families came together to travel. One of their most infamous members, Lewis Kessberg, joined at this point with his wife and family.
He was a stud, wasn't he?
No, and his was the actual, I don't know why his picture is the one I saved, but because he is the more infamous one of the group, his picture should be on the post that we do.
Got it.
So actually, he had a son that was born on the journey.
Well, I figure there's got to be some babies either born or made.
Yeah. I guess if that journey. Wagon's a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
Yeah.
Was that, you know, you think they probably had those signs out? That poor mother to give birth on the wagon trail. I'm telling you.
Do you think it was even any better though? If maybe it was just a wagon versus a house? Cot?
I know, but like at least the comfort of your own home. Was a midwife there? I don't even know. Were midwives in this group? I have no idea.
Yeah, that sounds rough.
I mean, maybe a lot of women just had like some midwifery experience, but
yeah, did she survive?
As far as I know, she did. Okay. I think so.
That's good.
So by June, they had gone over 450 miles and had 200 more to go to get to Wyoming. So it's all sounding pretty normal so far. Some expected, there were some deaths along the way, some minor setbacks and flooding. But like I said, it's all to be expected. And in one very haunting letter, Tamsin Donner, again, wife of George Donner, wrote that the journey had actually been smoother than expected so far. And that, quote, if things don't get worse than they have been, then the hardest part is behind us.
My mom died.
No, not her mom. James Reed's wife's mom.
Oh, okay.
Tamsin's mom was probably dead, honestly. Okay. She was 44. I doubt her mom was still alive. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
It's sad.
So words that would later go on to haunt people that she thought that the hardest part was behind them. And she had no idea what was coming. So that shortcut I mentioned earlier, the Hastings Cutoff, they were told by several passersby, and this is what's sad, they were told to avoid it. That they said this supposed shortcut was not a shortcut. At the very least, it was dangerous and like the potential reward was not going to be worth the risk.
Oh, man.
So it was around the 4th of July that the members stopped at Fort Laramie in Wyoming. They were feeling really patriotic because it's 4th of July and they're Americans and they're traveling and they're looking at the great land and the wilderness. And like, I'm sure they felt so grateful to be in America at the time.
I'm sure.
So it felt like the best of the U.S. So the trip had been actually pretty good up to this point. And as we saw from Tamsin's letter. She believed that the hardest part was behind them, but like she was like, this has been pretty good. And this is like such an idyllic location. location to celebrate the nation's birth.
Wyoming.
I know.
So beautiful.
We've been to Wyoming and I
can't wait to go back.
I would love to go back. Yes. Like we went to Yellowstone. We went to Jackson Hole. We were in Jackson Hole. Like, of course, it was a really long time ago. I don't know what Jackson Hole looks like right now, but it was a really cute town. Yeah. And I would love to go back. I love the mountains and we live in Flatland, Texas. So. Yeah,
it was definitely a nice change of scenery.
It's scenery that honestly, like I could have a house in the mountains.
I know.
I actually think I've been favoring the mountains over the beach lately. Like really? I used to love the beach and I wanted a house at the beach. And now I'm like, I kind of want a house in the mountains.
I kind of like them both equally.
Yeah.
But then, I also then like maybe you're turning. Like a lake mountain house.
Yes. Okay. Yes, definitely.
That'd be nice.
So it was Independence Rock, which is kind of weird because they started in Independence, Missouri. Then it's Independence Day. And now they're at Independence Rock. So I just feel like that's a weird like background theme of what's happening here.
Miss Independence.
So it was around Independence Rock that the Donner Party got a letter from Hastings. Mr. Cannot Mind His Own Business Hastings, telling the party that you guys need to take my shortcut. Guys, this will get you here faster. You've been delayed by death and storms. Take my shortcut.
What a dingleberry.
A total. Okay, sorry. I know we keep having a little side note here, but do you know I only recently just found out what a dingleberry was?
I have said it for years. You just let it slide or didn't notice?
I just didn't. It's
little poops on the butt of a, like a.
It's little, like, toilet like paper stuck to your.
Oh, poops. An actual dingleberry is little poop stuck to your butt.
Wait, what's the toilet paper pieces stuck to your butt?
I think just toilet paper.
What is a dingleberry?
A dingleberry is a term for a small piece of poop clinging to the butt of a human or animal. It's sometimes used as a way to call someone foolish or stupid.
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like a type of berry that like, oh, like oh, you little fruit berry. Cake or something, you know, like I didn't know. So anywho. Okay. Well, apparently I still didn't know because I thought toilet paper was a part of it and toilet paper was not in Siri's definition.
Well, at least you made a mess up today. I'm not the only one.
Well, you know how I found out, which was even more embarrassing, was a game where I had to act it out. And if you don't know what it is and you think it has something to maybe do with berries, so then I was like, berries. Okay, it probably has to do with testicles. I was making testicle gestures and nobody knew what I was talking about. And when I ran out of time, I was like, dingleberry, you guys. And they were like, I don't think you know what a dingleberry is, Ashley. And I was like, enlighten me. And I was so, felt so stupid.
That is hilarious.
So even worse that I had to act out a word that I apparently didn't know I didn't know.
Okay. Well, that's definitely pulling a Lainey.
Yes, it is. Yes. Colic. Call it cholera. Okay, so Hastings not minding his business. Hastings is a dingleberry telling them, please take me shortcut. It was, they're around Independence Pass. Sorry, I'm like kind of trying to find my space again. So it was around the Salt Lake area that the group had to decide if they were going to go the Hastings cutoff or if they were going to go the traditional route. So some of the group actually did split up at this point because some people were like, we were warned to not go. I know the traditional cutoff is longer, the traditional route is longer, but it's also the safer route. Mm-hmm. And other people said, don't do the Hastings cutoff. So they would just rather take the longer route. And then the other half of the group, that of course included Donner and several others, they decided, let's go this cutoff. So they did not know at the time that they were making a life or death decision.
Oh, that sucks.
Yes. So like, so frustrating. Because like I said, they got warnings and they came to the Donner party. The thing was, is that some of the leaders were getting warnings, but not like the whole group. So this wasn't like necessarily a whole group decision.
And so where are these warnings coming from? Did something like the Donner Party happen to another party? Like,
I do think like, yeah, passersby or like, hey, like people that just know the area better. Oh. They're like, we know that area. It's extremely dangerous. It's, you know, treacherous. It's unpredictable. It's just not even worth it. You know, like on a great season, maybe it works out, but probably not. So some of the members received warnings and decided to not let the rest of the group know. So you didn't really give everybody an opportunity to decide for themselves. But the ones that did get the warnings, like they decided if they were going to split off or not. So some really wanted to go the Hastings cutoff. So they kept the warnings to themselves and they carried on because they believed it would save 350 to 400 miles.
Dang.
Yes. And that it would ultimately take 7 weeks to get to their final destination if they use the Hastings cutoff. So on July 31st, 1846, so things have been smooth from May 12th to July 31st. I mean, as smooth as can be. You had at least one death. Mm-hmm. You had some storms. You had a birth. Yeah, like there's been some events, but nothing too crazy. So it was July 31st, 1846 that the groups decided to split and went their own ways. So as the family started making their way to Hastings Cutoff, they definitely noticed that the terrain started getting rough. They were told that most of the trail was flat, which was not true. Especially when you know you're getting over to the Rocky Mountain region. I don't really know why anybody would be like, yeah, that's flat.
Yeah.
Like, no, like it's, I mean, obviously we know, and you see like terrain maps, right? Like when you see maps, it gets like really dark brown where mountains are. Mm-hmm. I know we see that, and they might not have had that in the 1840s, but today we're like, that's where the globe is lumpy. Like, yeah. I appreciated that about globes.
It's too lumpy.
And they were told literal lies. So I'm not really sure, like I said, what Hastings had to gain by promoting this path, but if it wasn't flat, it was the literal road less traveled. There really wasn't a clear path here because, again, like the Oregon Trail had a clear path. Many people had gone it. Like, you know, when a dog runs over and over across the grass, yeah, they create a path. Yeah, like that's the Oregon Trail. Like there was a clear path most of the time. This was not. How do you know where to go? You have his goofy guidebook that he wrote at the time of never having traveled it himself. So it's a shaky guide at best.
Yeah.
So part of the way they were just following horse footprints. They were like, oh, here's some horse footprints. Maybe we're supposed to follow this. Aww. And there's other parts that had no indication, no markers or any previous indicators of where they were supposed to be going. They had very steep areas that had made it nearly impossible for wagons to cross over, which again, like you were warned to begin with that, hey, this isn't great for wagons. It's a rough area. They were like, some of them were at least told that this is not ideal for wagons. Maybe if you're on foot, you could do a lot more on foot than you can with a friggin' wagon.
Yeah. They have a whole school of children on those wagons, I bet.
Yeah. Yes, they do. But if it wasn't steep to climb, then they're also going through canyons. Again, don't want to do that with a wagon. And at some parts, there were actually giant boulders just straight up blocking their way. So they just literally couldn't get across these areas. So all these obstacles, in fact, did not save time, but created a situation where they were having to look for alternative routes to go around things like giant boulders, and then they'd have to find their way back to the cutoff. So like, you're not even staying on the shortcut. You're having to go around the shortcut just to get around like giant boulders, figure out how to go through canyons and across these very steep areas. And you know that feeling that they had too, that like you've kind of gone too far, but like you don't know if you should turn back, but you're definitely regretting your decision.
Yeah.
That's what the Donner Party is doing right now. Like they were like, this was a mistake. And they realized they were completely misled that this was not some kind of easy shortcut. And Hastings himself did at a couple parts attach notes to trees. Okay. Notes to trees.
So we traveled
with some directions.
Partially on this trail?
Yeah. So like, yeah, he did eventually before, but when he wrote his guide, he never took it. After writing his guide, he did take it. I don't even know if he successfully went through it because his directions still weren't good. He's just putting like nailing parchment to trees. Yeah. So like he could have left many directions maybe, but like parchment on trees, that's not a long standing, you know, like yeah. That's not going to hold up in weather. So we're into August, obviously. They found one of the notes that said, why don't you pop, this is not verbatim, halt your trip until Hastings could personally lead them the rest of the way. That sounds good. Except it's just a parchment on a tree. When did he leave that?
Yeah.
And when is he coming? And how does he know we're here? You can't call him. There's not a button to push. There's like no bat signal to put into the sky to let him know like, hey, we're here where you said to wait. So like, what the hell, man? So, yeah. No phone, no telecommunication. No way to know. So he did know that people were traveling his janky path, but you don't know when they're coming. And this note's just sitting on the tree. So the Donner Party stopped, took a breather because they're like, he said to wait, let's just wait. And they didn't know what, when, where, how, who was, what was going to happen here at this point.
That would make me so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like just sitting there.
If he's not here in a day, I'm leaving.
Yeah. Like what if he came the day before and was like, oh, no one's here at the tree. I'll come back next week. Like, yeah,
that
and you
would
have
drive
to wait.
Me nuts.
Yeah. Seriously. seriously. Like, this is so stupid. Like, so stupid.
Don't like this Hastings guy.
No, I don't like him. Like, this is reckless behavior. Write a guide so you can become famous for a shortcut. Get over yourself, man.
Yeah.
And that reckless behavior. And then he's, like, telling people, like, you should take it. You should take it. So, men ended up being like, we have to go on a search. Like, this is going south so fast. And we're just waiting for this guy who says he's going to come and personally take us. So the men went on search of Hastings, ended in some treacherous paths, canyons, and impassable areas. So this basically was a fruitless endeavor because when eventually Hastings was found, he gave them partial directions and that's it. Like, he did not come and assist. Like, I would have kidnapped him. I would have stuffed him in a potato sack bag and you're leading us because this is not cool that you did this to people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was like, oh, well, I'm not going to go do a personal trip, but like, if you see that oak tree, take a left. And then when you see that boulder, take a right, you know, like that kind of thing.
What did this guy look like? I imagine a troll.
He did look like a troll. You can look him up.
What's his first name?
Lansford.
Lansford.
No offense to other Lansfords, but it's just got a vibe to it. Name. It's a guy that wants to be famous, but can't really be famous for something good.
Oh, he became famous.
Yeah, he did. So, like I said, I don't know what he had to gain by making everybody take his path, but he realized he was in over his head and he started giving out half-hearted directions because he didn't know what he was doing, what he was saying. He was trying to backpedal. So, but he sure as shit was not guiding them the rest of the way. Like a note. Go ahead.
He kind of looks like Tom Cruise. I'm not saying, I mean, he's not ugly, but he does have a Tom Cruise look up to
like,
him.
Like, it's a pompous. Oh my God. He could be related to Tom Cruise. He's making like a goofy face.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sorry, I know I'm bumping into everything. God, I really need to change out this table. So, continuing on, they were only able to make it about, this is interesting, because remember I told you 15 miles per day?
Mm-hmm.
Through this Hastings cutoff, they could only go about 1.5 miles per day.
Oh my gosh.
So now a fraction of what they, like a tenth, a literal tenth of what they were doing before. Like 15 miles a day was already so small. So like I said, when you're talking about hundreds of miles left, like how?
Yeah. Yeah,
like you, this is so long. At this average, I mean, you would be talking like 2 more years of travel. That like this isn't okay. So especially for the older folks, you know, this was so disheartening because you're going at a snail's pace, clearing brush, pushing boulders out of the way. And now we're into late August. We get to the Great Salt Lake. So this was sort of rejuvenating. This was the best part of the Hastings cutoff, I would say. It was rejuvenating, very uplifting part of their journey. You're in late August, so you're about to get into fall weather. So they took in the views for a couple days, and then they were like, we have to keep going. So there was about a month left of summer before the fall and winter months started to hit. And now, like, when you're in the rocky areas, like, fall is more than what we get here in Texas, South Texas, no less. So now when these groups travel, they don't, like I said, they don't literally stay together the entire time. Like some people go ahead on horseback while the wagon people are just going to be slower.
Mm-hmm.
The horseback people kind of are looking ahead, making sure things are safe, making sure they know the way. And they're kind of like going back and forth. So they would go like sometimes maybe even a couple days ahead. So during some of these points in the journey where men were checking out the path ahead, sometimes they got lost. A few of these men almost starved to death just going ahead and checking the path. And they were not able to find their way back for extended periods of time. So one group got so desperate when they got lost off the quote unquote path, which there really wasn't one, but they got lost from their group. They almost had to resort to eating their horses just to stay alive. But luckily they ended up finding the group again just before it got to this point. Like they hadn't eaten in days. So one of the leading group members ended up getting tuberculosis and dying on the trip, which started to bring down the morale because you're already frustrated. You're already getting delayed. Some people have already started going through like little starvation things. Like this is just, it's just the start of getting really bad. So it was shortly after this that literally within a few days, the party had to, having to continue the trip, traveled through a 1,000 foot high terrain and then had to go down a desolate salt flat.
Ugh.
It was scorching hot. And there, it's a salt lick. Salt licks don't have vegetation. So there's no food for their animals, their cattle, or anything else.
Fuck you, Hastings.
Little to no water, making it one of the worst and most unforgiving parts of their journey. Now, obviously, when we start getting into the winter season, that is the worst time. But as far as like one of the worst places they went, like there was nothing in this land. And this was a reasonable time of year. It's just the terrain of this land being salty. Nothing could grow there. And so there was, and this is even worse, there was some water under the salt, but like this isn't drinkable, but that salt and that water and that sand made a very, very sticky area to travel through.
That sounds awful.
So sticky and the least ideal terrain for wagons carrying people and all of their belongings, like everything they have left in the world is on these wagons. So this group was running out of water. So this is like one of the first times like the whole group starts running out of water. Some had to travel ahead on foot just to go look for water resources. So many animals ended up being cut loose because they were moving so slow because they were stuck in this sticky salt flat. I said salt flat earlier, right?
You also said salt lick, so I don't know.
I think I say salt lick because that's what I'm used to saying for deer, but that's not what I meant. I don't think that's what I meant to say. And then some animals were dying of dehydration, which was just further slowing down the journey. So now you're having to cut animals loose just because they were dead weight in the sense they were moving slow. And then you had literal dead weight animals dying. So animals, other animals saw their doom, like they got freaked out and just ran away. So this lasted for 6 days when they had planned on 2 days getting through this salty, sticky area. And Hastings completely got the distance wrong for this portion of the trip. And that was the last straw for the Donner Party. They were like, fuck this guy. They knew at this point that they could never trust another word this guy said again. Like nothing he said ever added up. The days never added up. The time, the terrain, like nothing was truthful. So again, I think all he had to gain was fame and maybe a name for himself by creating this path, because yeah, he named it after himself. Some people believed that maybe he had like political ambition and that this would kind of give him some, like give him a reputation, but it's quite a risk when you've never taken the path yourself.
Yeah.
And also, like, did Hastings not think, what if this doesn't work? Like, what are the consequences if I give directions that make no sense?
That's what kills me, is I don't think he thought about that at all. I don't think he gave two shits.
It wasn't a thought. Like, I think he was like, I got this. I don't know. Like some people really need to think when you can't be, I was trying to think of like an expression, like you can't be so ambitious that you don't think about the consequences of these kinds of decisions, yeah, because it will be your ultimate downfall. And it was, everyone hated him. Even I do. Even reading this, I was so frustrated. I'm like, okay, screw this guy. So like I said, he did in fact make a name for himself, a guy for giving terrible directions, and he didn't know anything about the terrain that he encouraged and literally wrote to travelers. He ended up being a freaking dick and cost a ton of lives. So very reckless, and just didn't care about anybody's safety. So after 6 days of crossing the desert terrain, they lost 36 cattle and 4 wagons.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah. So, and all the things on those wagons too.
Yeah.
So this is food and transportation for the Donner Party. So half of that belonged to James Reed. So he's hella pissed, because he brought the most, like he had more of the money, the wagons, the cattle, the animals, all that stuff, which I guess like you bring the most, you probably have the most to lose too, but still like he was losing a lot. So once they made it through this harrowing part of the journey, right, you're probably like, again, the worst is behind us. We're not going to have to go through something like that again. Food and transportation for the Donner Party is starting to dwindle. So once they got through this part of their journey, they took a little break. They were like, okay, like some people lost more than others. Let's redistribute our supplies because some people lost so much. And like, we still need food. We still need to get through this. Like the people that lost 4 wagons, I don't know who each of those people were, but it might, like a family might have lost their one wagon they had and they have nothing else. So Reed decided he should take more of a leadership role at this point. He thought, let's go ahead and send some men, just on horseback or something, to California to Fort Sutton, because he had heard that they would assist stranded travelers. So they felt like they were getting to the point of like, we're stuck in this cutoff for way too long. It's delaying our trip. Let's go ahead and send the smoke signal. Like, we need help. Which, after 2 months they've been split up for 2 months now from this point. From July 31st, now we're into the end of September. So we're getting into fall. Now, fall is when it starts to get cold, and fall is when the snow starts to fall. And remember, they wanted to be done with this before the first snow fell.
Yeah.
So after 2 months after splitting up from the original group on the Oregon Trail, they found their way out of Hastings Cutoff at the end of September. Which is great, except it literally put them back on the original path. Hastings Cutoff turned out to be a huge delay, and they later came to find out after all of this that Hastings Cutoff was actually 125 miles longer. It was never a shortcut.
Ugh.
It was 125 miles longer and cost an entire month of time.
That sucks. A month they don't have.
Absolutely. They do not have that month. And now the Donner Party is about to face some extreme, extreme weather and horribly cold months ahead. So the Donner family did come into some Native American groups. Some Native Americans actually joined them on their journey for a little while. But it didn't come without some drama because there is obviously prejudice towards Native Americans at this time. And I can't verify this, but it was claimed that one of the Native peoples stole some clothes and killed some of the cattle. So tensions definitely started to grow. Now, again, I don't know that that happened, but clothes were stolen. Yeah. Cattle may have died. I'm not going to lie. There are some assholes on this trip too. So who's to say maybe one of them didn't do it and was like the Native Americans did it, because also people be bored in 1840. So who knows? Yeah. So going into October 1846. So remember, we went from May and now we're into October. So tensions and violence amongst the group started to grow. So in Iron Point, Nevada, the group struggled getting up a sandy mountain area because, again, I don't know if you know, but like heavy wagons don't do well with sand and steepness. So
yeah.
Sandy and steep, and the wagons are struggling because sand and wagons don't mix very well. So like the wheels were having a hard time getting a foothold, and obviously that would cause problems. So some of the members of the group began getting really heated with each other. And as the altercation started to grow, James Reed pulled out his knife in an attempt to kind of stop it. You know, like when somebody shoots a gun off into the air, like he pulled out his knife to just kind of like startle people and like, hey, yeah, pay attention. But a member saw him pull out the knife, not realizing that he wasn't really trying to hurt anybody. This other member, his name is Snyder, was looking at this as more of a threat, which it wasn't, and knocked Reed into the head. Reed, in self-defense, took the knife and did stab Snyder under the collarbone, which killed Snyder.
Wow.
So now you have an accidental killing.
A murder.
A murder most foul. The Nevada Territory at the time was not under American jurisdiction. It's the Wild West. So people take justice upon themselves, because you can't call the police and say, hey, there was a moita.
Yeah.
And let justice happen. So, that's why it's the Wild West. There's really no authority there, no real government. So the wagon trains basically administered their own justice. So the group members that witnessed the event came together to discuss how to handle the situation. George Donner, their main leader, was the head of the group with his family at the time, so it was up to the remaining members to decide Reed's fate. And Reed was also a leading member, and as the leader, he can't really get to decide his own fate, so it's left up to the other people. And opinions were heavily divided. Some people did see this as self-defense, that Reed was never trying to hurt anybody, but who will probably not be a great friend of ours, Lewis Kessberg, he wanted to hang Reed. He was like, let's hang this guy. And I don't know why. I don't know Lewis Kessberg, and I'm completely speculating, but he's the one I had in mind for maybe he stole clothes and killed some cattle and then blamed it on Native Americans, because Lewis Kessberg has that face.
Yeah.
And not only that, like he saw this ruckus happen and he decided to hang Reed, which kind of seemed a little extreme because it was an act of self-defense.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it was an act of self-defense. Most of the group was like, this does not deserve a death warrant.
And his family's there too, right?
Yes. That's his wife and sad. His seven children, I believe. Most people didn't think that this deserved a death warrant, but they did tell Reed, Reed, have to leave the group. So you can go ahead, you can leave. Like, not, it's actually not a terrible fate for him, because like going off on horseback is a lot easier than staying behind with these wagons and everything, but you will be separated from your family.
Yeah.
Your family will stay on the wagons and travel with us, but you yourself, you need to go alone. So his family.
Why didn't the family just leave?
Because like all their belongings.
Tell me, he's the sole survivor because he left.
I'm not going to tell you anything yet.
Don't do it.
He has wagons. He has cattle. So like his family, and I'm not saying he said this, I'm saying this. The family kind of acts as an insurance to get your things back too. Because if you're like, okay, fine, family, let's go. Like you're leaving all the things that you own behind, which was still multiple wagons, cattle, all that stuff. That yeah. was a lot of his. But his family would remain safe in the sense that like they'll stay with the group, but it obviously sucks being taken away from your family. So alone together, I don't think it would have been better. So in an act of kindness though, this is kind of sweet. One of those children between Reed and his wife, one was his stepdaughter. She actually handed him some food and a gun so that he would have a fighting chance in the wilderness.
That's sweet.
But it was around this point in early October of 1846 that the group started to split in mistrust. They started to split up and there was a lot of mistrust amongst the Donner Party.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was starting to grow suspicious of each other. Essentially, they'd been in the car too long together. They were just going a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
They'd seen a lot at this point and tensions were running high. So like I said, so we're starting to get into the winter months of the Rocky Mountains. Grass is now becoming scarce, which meant food for cattle was becoming scarce. So cattle and whatever other animals. So animals start to begin to starve at this point. And if the animals start dying, the people are going to start starving themselves.
Yeah.
And food was extremely difficult to come by. So as they continued on, they were actually raided by some Native Americans at one point and did lose even more cattle. Now, as far as the Native Americans are concerned, right, this is how a lot of them got by. Like, this was just kind of a raid for food for them. They need cattle to eat. And again, this isn't like defense for anybody. It's just kind of seeing both sides of every situation. So since the cattle were on the verge of starvation, they began walking on foot more and more just to not strain the ox that were pulling the wagons. So more people are walking. They're trying not to strain the ox because food is getting scarce. The ox don't have the energy to carry as much weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it was mid-October that food really was almost completely gone. And some of the group started to disperse more because they're growing desperate and they still have to get through the Sierra Nevada before the snow fell. And once that would happen, they would pretty much be stranded. So like people were terrified of like, please God, don't let it start snowing.
So where are they dispersing off to? They just think another path might be better. And that's.
Yeah. Or like they have an idea of where the main path is, but they're going to go off into the woods and they're going to go hunt deer. Like I'm going to go off over here and I'm going to go find resources. And then you essentially meet up like within a few days.
Got it.
The Oregon Trail was like a pretty common way to go. And I think, you know, you still have like compasses and stuff like that. So you have an idea of where to get back to. So they were told that the snow would begin to fall around November 15th, like November is when it would fall. So at this point, they had 3 weeks before the snow was supposed to fall. And there was a small ray of sunshine for a moment. George Donner and his family showed up with some food and Native Americans that were going to be guides to help them. So things are looking up for about half a second. So this probably bought them a little bit more time, but now they were approaching the end of October and now it's about 2 weeks before the snow falls. So George Donner, his wagon broke.
Oh,
you got to
no.
stop. You got to delay. You got to fix it. In the midst of fixing his wagon, he sustained a really nasty hand injury that further delayed. His hand actually became completely useless because he injured it so badly and it will go on to become infected. So
he will go on to chop it off.
I'm not saying that. So one of the diary entries, there was one person keeping notes on this trip. His name was Patrick Breen. He was one of the members and he is the main source that people use to kind of read through the Donner Party.
Mm-hmm.
Breen said, and this is paraphrased, that early November, they were looking at the moon, which had a ring around it. You know what a ring around the moon means.
Blood on the moon.
Blood on the moon. Something bad is coming. In reality, like witches may believe that something bad is coming. It does mean a storm is coming, which a storm could be a metaphor for something bad's coming.
Yeah.
It means a store's coming.
Storm.
Not a store.
A new store.
H-E-B was coming. They were going to be fine. So Breen looks up. It's early November. Sees that ring around the moon. He writes about it in his diary. The next morning, 5 feet of snow had covered the area. And that storm came and hit and basically halted them from being able to move forward here at this point. So snow came early.
Oh, good. That's
it
just
came,
what they needed.
It came about 10 days too early. So the Donners themselves were miles ahead of the rest of the group due to George Donner's injury. Miles behind. George Donner got injured, so he's behind everybody. So that's not looking good for their leader. The rest of the group made makeshift cabins because at this point they can't go anywhere.
Dang,
so now they have
to make cabins, not like tents.
Makeshift cabins.
Yeah.
They are more like tents, but they're using because they're using like hides and things like that. They're like sticks that you're finding. Like you're quickly trying to build something to keep yourself as least exposed to the elements as possible.
Yeah.
So winter fell early on this unfortunate year in 1846, and the storm lasted for 8 days. And food rations, we said, they were already low. And the cattle now began dying because now with 5 feet of snow, where are they eating?
Yeah.
They got nothing to eat. Those bushes are covered now.
This is heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. So they had an actual pile of carcasses that they would just lay the cattle that perished. So the lake was nearly frozen, and they did attempt to fish. One member did kill a bear.
Wow, he just went straight for the beer.
He went straight for that beer, that Miller Lite. So one member killed a bear, which did sustain them for a little while, because like a bear's kind of huge.
Yeah,
but also huge. Like you don't have a whole lot of ways to keep things fresh for a long time back then. Like you do have the snow. I just don't know how that works out in the elements. Like, do you just leave the bear out in the snow? Just I don't think that works. No idea. Salt is one of the things they use for preservation, and they didn't have any. They didn't have salt, so food is spoiling. But I guess the silver lining is if you don't have much food, you really don't have to worry about food spoiling. So I guess you don't need salt.
Yeah. And then you starve in the end.
But the members that were more fortunate than others were having a hard time sharing with the ones that lost more, because now you're in a scarcity mindset. So like, even though you might not be suffering as much and you see others suffering, you're like, do I even have anything to give to you? Because I don't know how long I have to sustain myself.
Yeah.
And when you have kids, that's really hard. Because like, if I'm looking at my kids and I'm looking at this other family, it would be hard knowing you're giving up potentially food for your kids in the future to feed these mouths right now. I get it. So families start charging high prices for food and cattle. They're like, I'll give this to you, but it's going to cost them? Charging or like expensive trades of some kind. Like you're going to, I'm making this up. Like you're going to give me 10 hides for like a meal tonight, you know, like just high prices in whatever trade they were doing. It wasn't necessarily like specifically monetary.
Yeah.
So even small groups tried to carry on and pass, leaving wagons behind, but nobody was successful. So now we're into November 20th, 1846. Breen writes in his diary, came to this place on the 31st of last month that it snowed. We went to the path. Like, this is literally how he wrote it. Punctuation was different back then, so it's harder for me to read it now. Came to this place on the 31st of last month that it snowed, and we went to the pass. The snow so deep, we were unable to find the road. Within 3 miles of the summit, then turned back to the shanty on the lake. Stanton came one day after we arrived here. We again took our teams and wagons and made another unsuccessful attempt to cross in company with Stanton. We returned to the shanty. It continuing to snow all the time. We were here. We now have killed most part of our cattle, having to stay here until next spring. And I live on poor beef without bread or salt.
Oh.
9 days later, November 29th, still snowing about 3 feet deep. Killed my last oxen today.
Oh no.
We'll skin them tomorrow. Gave another yoke to the Fosters. Hard to get wood. So in an attempt to try and find provisions for the group, many of the, especially adult men, left camp, leaving a few women to watch over the dozens of children. So while one of the groups were out, Jacob Donner, remember George Donner's brother, he died. George Donner's hand became so infected that he was completely unable to assist with any kind of manual labor.
I was just motioning he's going to chop it off.
Oh, okay. That also looks like cut it out, like stop talking. Oh. So I'm like, what? So at this point now, you have only a small handful of able-bodied men going into December.
Ugh. This is horrible.
So Patrick Breen writes, December 1st, 1846. Snow about 5.5 feet or 6 feet deep. Difficult to get wood. No. Okay, it's hard to say because I literally copy and pasted exactly from his diary.
Mm-hmm.
And spelling was different back then, so I'm not quite sure what he's trying to say here. No gong from the house. Completely housed up. Looks as likely for snow as when it commenced. Our cattle all killed, but 3 or 4 of them. The horses and Stanton's mules gone, and cattle suppose lost in the snow, no hopes of finding them alive. And then he said, Milton Noah went to Donner's 8 days since, not returned yet, thinks they got lost in the snow.
Hmm.
So on Christmas, now we're on December 25th.
Oh, this is a Christmas episode, guys.
It is. Here we go. It's very short. on Christmas, Margaret Reed, James' wife, remember James was like told to go bye-bye a while ago. She had saved enough food to make soup for Christmas.
Aw.
Small glimmer of hope. small little glimmers of joy. Like, no, this was not their best Christmas, but like it was something.
Yeah.
So within a few days, though, after Christmas, they were facing starvation because she had saved that food for Christmas Day so that they had something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So they were facing starvation, so much so that they were starting to burn the hides that some of them were using for shelter and just eating the hides. Like, they were just putting the hides over the fire and eating it, like the hides.
It makes me so sad. That reminds me of Yellow Jackets when they started eating the airplane seats, like the cushions.
Yellow Jackets?
It's a show on Showtime. It's a group of soccer players, I think, and their plane crashes. It's really twisted.
That's like eating the hides, too. You're like eating the leather, or it's fake leather. I don't know. The Graves family that had lent the Reed family supplies, too, had become so desperate themselves that they went to the Reeds and they said, give us our ox hide back, because they were now desperate that the stuff they had loaned them, they were like, you have to give it back to us. So now Reed, again, her husband's gone and she's just there with the kids trying to like be the best mom she can be, but like single momming now for a long time. Some of the other members started to die off of malnutrition, which is interesting because it doesn't say starvation. A lot of it says malnutrition because like hides are not providing you the nutrition you need to get through this time. So not outright starvation, but they had gone several weeks to at least a month now without any proper nutrition. And here, one of their group members, Patrick Denton, suggested that one of the members should actually sacrifice themselves so the rest could eat.
Wow.
Like, you're desperate at that point.
Yeah.
So, well, obviously, in a complete position of desperation, this was no one's first choice. Like, nobody was like, I've been eyeing this person, I want to eat them. You're talking regular people. These people like were not savages to start out here.
Yeah.
And they did agree that, okay, let's go ahead and sacrifice somebody. Like, they essentially took a vote and that they were going to sacrifice somebody. And they were like, do we do this in a lottery? Do we do a drawing or a duel? And Patrick Denton, who suggested this to begin with, was the one to draw the short stick, and they were gonna eat him.
That's kind of funny.
But as I know, like, kind of whoever smelt it dealt it, kind of thing. Yeah. So I don't know how. I'm not literally saying they drew sticks. I don't know, but I'm using that more as the expression. Mm-hmm. So the storm and the wind grew stronger and ended up blowing out the fire. So the whole eat Patrick plan had to get delayed because, like, you're not gonna eat Patrick raw. You got to cook Patrick. But
I can't even. Cooking Patrick. Sorry.
So
you can't just like eat Patrick.
Yeah. Well, now the fire's out, guys. We can't eat Patrick tonight. But like, Patrick had to go to bed that night knowing he was gonna be dinner.
Yeah.
What kind of headspace are you in to like, I can't even imagine.
I can't either.
I'm sorry. I'm going off into the woods. I'm just going to try and make it. Like, sorry, I suggested that we eat one of us. I didn't know it was going to be me. I'm just going to part ways.
Yeah.
So one of the group members, Dolan, started to literally lose his mind. I mean, like, people are malnourished. You're going crazy here. So Dolan started to lose his mind. And again, no judgment. And no judgment for most of these people's actions. Because in a time of this kind of desperation, who knows how we would be.
Yeah.
So Dolan's kind of losing his mind here a bit because we've never endured anything like this. He, in the middle of a blizzard, stripped off his clothes and ran into the woods naked. And he literally was like, it's so warm outside.
Is he ill?
Yes. Well, he's ill in the sense like he's losing his mind. Like, he's going insane.
Okay.
And so like he thinks it's warm outside. He takes off his clothes. Like, marble's gone. He did return, but he did die from exposure. So
literal exposure.
Yep. So you almost ate Patrick, but then another member ran off naked and then died from exposure. The morale was the lowest of the lows, but this is where, in an act of complete and total desperation, they ate Dolan.
Ugh.
And as more members started to die off of malnutrition and exposure to the elements, members didn't really have to choose each other to eat, like, because people are just dying naturally.
Sad.
It is sad.
Like, imagine if we were traveling as a family and you died and I had to eat you, or vice versa, knowing the person.
I just don't know how, again, state of mind at that point, I have no idea. Like, a few hours and I feel like my stomach's rumbling and I'm starving, you know? Like, some of these people were going a week without food.
Yeah.
And they're making unimaginable decisions to eat the dead members of the Donner Party. But up to this point, it had been people that were just dying. They hadn't had to kill anybody to eat. So they agreed to not eat anyone that was, one, their family. So if a family member dies, we're not going to eat our own family. But nevertheless, they did have to work on preserving as much meat as possible from the dead members because they just didn't know how long they were going to be stranded. And thankfully, this here, like I said, is not a situation where anybody's having to kill anybody. It's members that were already dying. So for much of December and into January, the Donner Party tried just hunkering down and weathering down the storm, and they're at Truckee Lake. It's called Truckee Lake at the time. This actually does became named after the Donners later, but it's called Truckee Lake. So this is where...
Is the lake called Donner Lake now? That's kind of creepy.
It is.
Ooh.
They had been here most of the time, and food and provisions were gone. And at this point, you're literally waiting people out to die to eat.
Could you imagine if someone was just staring at you? Like,
no. Because, like, you know, people are starting to go crazy. And, like, it has to be exacerbated if you're a parent, too, because you're... Stop it. God, she's licking her lips at me while I'm trying to talk to her. Because if you have kids, like, you don't... God, I can't imagine if anything happened to your children. Oh, no. Like, so you probably are like, I'm sorry, I gotta feed my kids. Like, my kids could die. So I cannot imagine the state of mind here.
Are the Donners back with them now? Or still lost?
I can't remember now, but I think they're still lost. They do show back up if they're not there yet. So the group decided that they might as well travel and try to get through this and find resources before the entire group dies. Because at this point, you're just kind of going off one by one. And at some point, you're like, how long is the storm going to last? How long are we going to last? So on the journey, they got desperate for food again, and they ended up removing their snowshoes and eating the ox hide that was the webbing on their snowshoes.
Wow.
Which had to be so gross. And then things got a little bit darker. The group did start plotting to kill two members for food. And I believe this was likely a racist decision because they were the two Native Americans that were coming along to help as guides.
Oh, that's so sad. They were just trying to help, y'all.
Good news is, fortunately, at least momentarily, these two members caught wind of the plot and they left quietly into the night.
That's good.
And again, not to defend this, but it's also hard to not emphasize the fact that this was a shit situation and some of them had gone 10 days at this point without food. If you've ever done like a 3-day juice cleanse or something like that, like where you're still getting nutrients 10 days with nothing but like melted snow to have in your body, awful. And not to mention that when you're in these kind of conditions, you're supposed to have like 4,000 to 6,000 calories a day. You're talking about zero calories.
Pack it on.
Yes. So it is fair to say that we cannot imagine this scenario. So like, I am not passing judgment on this. I don't like the killing and plotting stuff. That is harder to defend, but I understand the desperation. So after having left Camp Truckee Lake, 25 members had died. 7 were left. For this part of the party. So on their journey, they ran into two Native American men who left quietly into the night so that they would not get eaten. They were found, and with resentment and crazy having taken over the group, they did end up murdering them and eating them.
Wow.
What's worse is that the Donner Party did not keep this a secret. Like, they were telling people, like, we ate Native Americans. And even the ones that did get saved, like, they were telling people and there were no consequences. Like, they were like, we murdered and we ate them. And other people were like, oh wow,
you
must have been so desperate. But like, signs of the times.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, so that's really horrible. It was cold-blooded murder, and yes, they were desperate, but again, cold-blooded murder. And you didn't go, like, when they went off into the night, you weren't like, let's find two other people. You were like, let's kill the two Native Americans because they were the most expendable to you.
Yeah, that's messed up.
So that's where it, like, really started taking a dark turn. And in a weird turn of events, the group came across a tribal camp soon after. The tribe did share what little sustenance that they had to the Donner Party.
That is nice.
It was nice. You think they would have done that had they known that it wasn't... I don't think it was their tribe members, but like, had they known that they were doing that to Native Americans, I doubt they would have shared.
Oh, yeah. Kill on sight.
Exactly. But this did help the remaining members of the Donner Party, again, buy more time. So it took 33 days from leaving their camp at Truckee Lake before they found six lost members of the Donner Party near the Sacramento Valley. So if you remember our friend Reed, remember he was told to go off by himself. His wife and his kids had to stay with the group. He was safe. He was actually at Fort Sutter in California, and he had been freaked out because he had no idea where his family was this entire time. Like, there's no messenger and letters or anything like that. So he had been really freaked out about his family. He knew the weather conditions were really poor. He had no idea their fate. So he did try to go out unsuccessfully on a mission to find his family, but the paths were heavily blocked by snow and fallen trees. And so he had to retrace his steps and just go wait back at Fort Sutter again. So while this is all happening, there was another little important detail going on in American history called the Mexican-American War. So this is between 1846 to 1848. So roads and resources were already heavily impacted in the West due to war.
Yeah.
So even though people knew the Donner Party needed help desperately, only three men went out to go look for these people. Three? That's all they could spare.
But they were soldiers.
This is terrible timing. I don't know that they were soldiers.
Okay.
So even articles were coming out in the paper that they knew there were people stuck in this area, especially because you had some of the members of the party who did make it to California who were like, my family is stuck out there.
So that one guy did survive? That
James Reed, he did survive.
I knew it.
Yeah. So even in the news articles, they knew that people were resorting to cannibalism in this area. So this did gain some sympathy, and people were like, we need to help these stranded travelers. Clearly, they've gone real desperate. Plus, yeah, they probably were like, we also really want to talk to these people. So now, from Breen's diary, March 1st, there are 10 men arrived this morning from Bear Valley with provisions. We are to start in 2 or 3 days and cache our goods here. Amongst them, some old, they say the snow will be here until June. Okay, so we're in March. Like, we've been here for 5 months, 4 to 5 months.
Yeah, but their travel all has been 10 months, right?
Yes. So rescuers did arrive. The rescuers found the remaining members' shanty cabins buried under the snow. Ox hides used for roofs were rotting and emitting a very foul smell. And this is like what they were staying in as their shelter. Everything was bad. I mean, it was death, decay, and starvation all around. Mm. And keeping in mind, though, that rescuers, they're not coming in a helicopter. They're coming and you still have to travel. You have provisions now, but like, you still have to travel. So you can't take the weak, the dying. Like, you can only take those that can still travel, which is not as many. Many of the remaining members were in terrible shape. Reed's wife was faced with the Sophie's Choice of decision to decide whether to travel with her two older kids or stay behind with her younger kids that were in no position to travel. Like, they were starving.
Stay with the little kids.
So the two youngest told their mom,
you can eat me, mommy.
No. They basically encouraged her to go and like try to survive and like come back for us. I can't even imagine like going with two of your kids or staying behind with two of your kids.
Yeah.
Which I think some of their kids did die. So the next group that came to rescue did include Reed himself, and he was reunited with his wife. But they did lose some children, I'm fairly certain.
So they started with 7, right?
I think so.
Now they have 4?
I think so, yeah. So Jacob Donner, remember Jacob Donner had died. His stepson, this is really terrible, kind of is his own undoing a little bit. But anyway, Jacob Donner's stepson, his name is William Hook. He was getting saved. He found a food store. He broke in and just started scarfing food down. If you do not know this, that is not a good idea if you are starving to death, because your body has been in starvation mode for a long time. Like, this isn't, I haven't eaten in a week and I'm going to eat a lot. Like, you're going, you know, days and days without eating, and then you're eating a little bit and days without eating.
Yeah.
So I
get slow.
Yeah. I read in one source that said he broke into the camp's food supply and stole food, or another said he broke into a food store. I'm not sure. If this food store was there, I don't know why you wouldn't, but I think it was the camp's stored food.
Got it.
So maybe he kind of deserved it. I don't know. But when a person who is that malnourished eats too quickly and too much food, the body cannot handle the sudden influx of nutrients that comes into the body, and it leads to a fatal metabolic imbalance. So when your body has been in starvation mode for so long, it's terrible. It's called refeeding syndrome. So even though William survived the worst part of this, he literally ate himself to death.
That's sad.
Yeah. So in case you need to know, after starvation, you are supposed to eat under medical supervision, or at least at a slower pace, so that your body can begin adapting to the influx of nutrients that are resupplying your body. Mm-hmm. So for William's mother, Elizabeth, she now lost her husband and now she's lost her son, and was later found in one of the cabins by a rescue party starving to death, and their remaining children had sustained themselves by eating Jacob Donner's organs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Also, how are you supposed to go through life after eating your dad's organs or anybody's organs? But
I don't know.
Like, there's not enough therapy in the world.
I would love to hear what their life was like after.
I don't know if you would love to.
Well, correct. That's not the wrong words.
So when these rescuers took the people that could go, obviously word got out now. Like, there is a desperate group that needs help. So the next group of rescuers raised $500 for a mission to save the remaining members. Of course, what they found was still pretty unbelievable. They were floored by the conditions. They were also malnourished. And some of them had mentally deteriorated so much. One mother was so mentally deteriorated and she was so malnourished that she was blind and her children were pretty much completely neglected.
She went blind from...
from malnourishment, yeah.
Wow.
One member was found with a leg of another human, indicating, obviously, that cannibalism had taken place. So next found was George and Tamsin Donner. So they did find George and Tamsin daughter. Tamsin was in relatively good health, comparatively anyway. But George, remember, he sustained that hand injury previously, and the rescuers had found that it had become so infected, the infection had gone up to his shoulder.
Damn.
It started with his hand, so it's gone all the way up his arm. So George Donner could not go with the next rescue mission due to his physical condition, and Tamsin had to decide if she stayed with her husband or left with the rescuers. She decides to stay with her husband because she is being reassured that another rescue party is coming, so she decides to stay back with George Donner.
The way you're saying that doesn't sound great.
So they sent some of their children to go with the rescue party, but unfortunately, like the main theme of the story, all of this is so unfortunate, another blizzard hit.
Ugh.
One of the children froze to death. Another had burns so severely that she didn't even know she was sleeping with her feet on the fire because the blizzard was so freezing cold. She didn't know that her feet were burning. Like, she thought that was like a cold effect.
Oh my gosh.
Ultimately, George Donner ended up dying just days before the next rescue mission came.
Ugh.
Louis Kessberg, like we said, one of the most notorious and pretty villainous people in the story, was barely claimed by his family after this whole ordeal. Like, literally, they were like, we don't know that guy. So rumors persisted that he was the quickest to eat his fellow travelers. And remember, he wanted to hang James Reed. He's quick to be like, yeah, let's kill them and eat them. Not all agree with that, the fact that he was the most savage, but many people believe he was the most savage of all the members. They said he had a terrible temper. And I think that was a big part of it. He had a terrible temper. And obviously he did resort sometimes to cannibalism. He was one of the ones that would resort to murder to eat while everyone else was eating the dead out of desperation. And most of all that did not help his reputation and why people think he was just a savage murderer was the fact that he was one of the ones that stayed behind with the Donners. And when that last rescue party came in April, he was the only one found alive. And this got sensationalized, and that's why it's kind of hard to know what's like the muddled, you know, truth and fact and all that. So his story did get sensationalized, but when he was found as the only one left alive, he was surrounded by human remains, according to the articles. And of course, only he lived to tell the tale of what happened. So no one really believed him. Plus, Tamsin Donner was in relatively good health when they left her. So what happened to her? Only Louis Kessberg could tell what happened.
Yeah.
But what we presume is, so Tamsin Donner was found dead, and Kessberg, we believe, murdered her and ate her. He was in possession of her jewelry and $250 in gold. So we think...
scumbag.
Yeah, we think he was like... Maybe he wasn't even like hungry anymore because several people were dead.
Yeah.
It might have just been to steal or shut her up. Like, if you killed anybody, she's going to go out and tell that story later. So newspapers called him the human cannibal. He ended up getting acquitted. Yeah. This did not help his reputation. So he was acquitted of murder, and he was the most open about discussing the cannibalism, while others were like ashamed of it.
Yeah, I bet I would be.
Others did not want to talk about it, but he was pretty vocal about it. So that didn't help his reputation. He denied murdering anyone and said he only ate people that died on their own, but most people say that's not true. We may never really know because he was the last to be rescued, found with human remains around him. So the only one that was able to tell his story, you know, like they were all dead.
Yeah.
So ultimately, he died in 1895. So he survived this whole ordeal. Remember, 1846. He survives until 1895, poor and alone in a hospital for destitute people.
Oh.
So he lived a really, like, sad life after that. So just kind of wrapping up some people here. So I wanted to throw in Lansford Hastings, the guy who gave really bad directions.
Yeah.
He died in 1870 at the age of 51. He tried to colonize Brazil with a bunch of Confederate sympathizers.
What a dingus.
Yeah. In all, there were 47 survivors of the original 87. 32 of them were children.
Wait, how many survivors?
There were 47. So 40 okay. died, 47 survived. 32 of those 47 were children.
Wow.
So most were children that ended up surviving. Of the main families, James Reed and his wife survived along with two of their daughters. Louis Kessberg, obviously. Patrick Breen, whose diary was the one we were looking at and is one of the main sources that's always used. His family is the only whole family. Family that survived. Oh, everybody wow. else lost family members.
Well, that's good for him.
So they did not, the Breen family, who documented this whole thing, did not lose a member. No one over the age of 45 survived. And Isabella Breen was the youngest. She was 1 year old at the time of this whole ordeal. And she was the last surviving Donner member who died at the age of 90 in 1935.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
And one of Reed's daughters that survived, she was 13 when they were rescued, also kept candy and cookies in her pocket until the day she died at 87 years old.
I bet she's probably always forever just worried about starving.
Did you ever hear that, like, with Holocaust members, like, Americans that came were giving them, like, Hershey chocolate?
I do.
And they always kept chocolate. Like, that kind of trauma, you have to, like, you know that affects you so much. Like, that's core shaking.
Yeah.
So she said, quote, "We have left everything, but I don't care for that," she wrote to her cousin after the rescue. "We have gone through with our lives. Don't let this letter dishearten anybody. Remember, never take no cutoffs and hurry along as fast as you can."
It's beautiful.
So don't take any shortcuts in life, people. Just a couple arbitrary anecdotes. Several places have been renamed to commemorate the events of 1846 to mark the historical significance of the Donner Party. Truckee Lake is now named Donner Lake. The mountains pass in the Sierra Nevada with elevation over 7,000 feet is now named Donner Pass. And near Donner Pass, there's a park to commemorate what happened here, and it's Donner Memorial State Park, which I will just go ahead and add, people have had very strange experiences there.
Really?
Some people truly believe that they have been possessed. Not possessed in, like, the sort of demonic way, but possessed in, like, all of a sudden they say they feel, like, this, like, longing and just, like, very strange feelings. Like, they feel like they are one of the people that kind of went through this traumatic thing. And a lot of people believe it's Tamsin Donner. They say that they see her ghost. Supposedly there's a ghost of a dog, too. He was one of the rescuer dogs. I think his name was Rex. Yeah, people say they have seen very weird experiences or, like, shanties and camps set up and that people are asking for help and then they go leave for help and they come back and then nothing is there and there's no sign that a camp ever was there. So just very strange experiences. I found it interesting, but I'm probably not going to go.
Yeah. No, same. I'm not either.
So, on this holiday season, remember to eat hearty. And I'm not going to lie. Like I said, I snacked a lot while doing the research here because I hate reading about starvation. So be thankful for the people in your life and the things that you have. While this isn't really a positive story, it is a story about perseverance and the will to survive. It's also about community. We need each other, and it really does take a village. So no matter what you are going through this holiday season, somebody has had it worse. We have comforts today like heaters, lighters, matches, and easier ways of travel, and rarely does anybody starve to death in the United States. So let's take in this story about a harrowing experience and turn it into a powerful message about endurance and the importance of gratitude. Oh my God, I feel like I'm gonna cry.
I know.
What is happening?
We really wrapped it up quite beautifully.
I wanted to end it on a high note because, like, that was dark, okay? I was in a place when I read this. I was like, I need to end this on a high note. So sorry. I'm just gonna cry for a minute. Nope. Struggling. We hope you enjoy this holiday season and have a very Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Damn it. I can't get through it. And have a festive season. Know that we appreciate you guys so much. And we hope you keep listening.
And have a very Merry Christmas.
But man, I went into a sack of tears. That's so weird. That was hilarious. I wasn't expecting it. I was like, oh my God, it's coming. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like sometimes crying is like, you know, like when you feel like you're going to throw up, it's like coming up your chest. Like crying is like you feel it coming up like your cheeks. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Anyway, if you don't follow us on Instagram, please go follow us at haunted.real.estate. And please, if you could rate and review us on your preferred podcast platform, we'd so appreciate it. And if you have any recommendations or interesting real estate stories of any variety, please email us at hauntedrepod@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.